You ready?
Yeah.
You ready? All right, hold on. Here we go.
Heidi ho, everybody. Travis Brown, MyAggieNation.com. Over there, President Zachary Taylor, WTAW, running the twisting and tweaking on the boards.
On the boards,
on
yes.
The boards.
You need to put on the boards
on
after
the boards,
that statement.
Zach Taylor,
yes.
Over there.
Yeah.
This is the My Aggie Nation podcast. Thanks, everyone, for tuning in. This, the My Aggie Nation podcast, which we can now proudly say, featured on Spotify and Apple Podcasts. Apple Podcasts.
The eTunes?
Apple. I was about to say iTunes. It's not on iTunes.
It's not
Apple
on iTunes.
Podcasts.
Apple Podcasts.
So, now we have to do that annoying thing where we tell everyone, you need to go on to those platforms, your preferred platform, Spotify, Apple Podcasts, and subscribe.
I mean, why would you not want to go on and subscribe? That's the better
question. You get a fun little notification whenever I get around to posting this on to our website. You know, it pops up. You can listen to it. Fun times.
That's
for
nifty.
All.
It only took us how long? 2 years?
3 years.
3 years?
3 years.
We've been
well,
doing this
two,
for 3 years?
2.5 years.
Okay.
Because I got here in February of 2016, and we started this in August of 2016.
Oh, wow. Time flies
now,
and
only,
you're having fun.
As of right now, only the last year's podcasts are on those platforms. So if you want to go back and like listen to our first podcast, you're going to have to go on MyAggieNation.com, which we also invite you to listen to it on MyAggieNation.com as well. It's easier on those other ones when you're on your cell phone.
It makes it easier. I recall our very first guest would have been Maggie Malone. Former Texas A&M javelin thrower, right?
She was our first guest. I think we did an episode without a guest for the very, very first episode.
Yeah, we went
episode.
Guestless.
Yeah. So
it
maybe
happens.
We'll revisit. We should, this August, when things get a little slow, we should revisit our best interviews.
Oh, very nice.
I think once you've done this for 3 years, you can do
yeah,
that.
You can do a best of.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm down.
Anyway, well, one of those interviews could be the guy that we've had on the podcast before. But we brought him back. I actually interviewed him yesterday for a story I was doing. So we're going to run a little audio from the interview. So, bear with us if it's a little not, you know, tightly questioned because it was just a phone call. But, this is former Texas A&M center, Eric McCoy, who has a very good shot of being the highest drafted Aggie in this weekend's NFL draft. And, he talked to him a lot about his hometown of Lufkin, Texas, which has a pretty darn storied history of football, but especially football players that went on to not only play in the college ranks, but then in the NFL. They have actually
right.
15 players, by my count, that have gone on to play in the NFL. And of those, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 8 were drafted. McCoy, which is something he'll talk about in this clip, too, he'll talk a little bit about his high school, a little bit about his upbringing there, a little bit about coming to A&M and what that meant to him playing. And then a lot of mock drafts have him projected that he could go as high as 22, 23. If that were to come true, he would then be the highest drafted football player to come out of Lufkin High, beating out one Dez Bryant.
Ooh, Dez. Throwing up the X.
And then just also fun facts from Lufkin. Two other Aggies on the list. Well, one other Aggie on the list of guys who got drafted, and that's Reggie McNeil.
Yeah.
He was drafted sixth round in 2006. Also, you have...
Javorski wasn't drafted, correct?
Javorski wasn't drafted, but
right.
he played in the NFL, was from Lufkin. That's Eric's cousin. He'll... He won't talk about that in this clip, but he'll talk about it in the story that I'm putting out for tomorrow. And then Don Mulbach, the long snapper,
oh, okay.
came from Lufkin, was also an Aggie in that list. So anyway, here is Eric McCoy.
What's kind of been the scene for you since Pro Day, and kind of who have you talked to? What's it just been like?
Yeah, so I've just been going on visits. I had 2 before Pro Day, 4 after. And I've really just been staying around the College Station area, staying at my friend Kwame's house, making sure that I'm working out and staying in shape because, you know, the weekend after you get drafted is when rookie camp starts.
Mm-hmm. Definitely. What's your plan for watching?
My plan is actually pretty simple. I'm going to go back home, back to Lufkin, go to my grandparents' house, have the whole family over, a couple of close friends over. We're just going to wait for my name to be called, whether that's first day, second day, whenever that happens.
Yeah. Has it really set in yet? Has it seem like it's here? And you know, I'm sure you grew up watching the draft. Is it kind of set in that this is your time yet? Or is that still seem like it's far away?
It has, but it hasn't at the same time. Like, it's something I've been waiting for my whole life for this moment, but even when I'm here, I'm not really like, dang, it's actually about to happen. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I just can't wait, honestly.
Yeah, yeah. Well, you know, something I'm kind of interested in, and kind of maybe what I'm angling a little bit of this story about too, is Lufkin has a pretty, I know it's not any kind of new news, but Lufkin has a pretty strong NFL history. Lufkin High from some guys coming out. How is coming from Lufkin and playing your high school football there help prepare you for this week and this weekend?
Yeah, I would say that they did a great job. You know, it's a great area to grow up in. It's all about football. It's what you see on Friday Night Lights. Mm-hmm. Every Friday, there's thousands of people in the stands watching you play football, so you're used to the big stage already. You know, there's a great coaching staff there. You know, Coach Quick, Coach Green, Coach Cook. Those are all guys that I trust. That I think did a really good job developing me. And then just the talent level that's in East Texas. A lot of people don't know about it. But week in and week out, we had to face some tough opponents, and I feel like that really prepared me for the college game.
So now looking back on some of those names, some of those pictures that you saw, and I'm sure that you at least probably have in the back of your mind, or someone's whispered here or there, kind of some of these mock draft perspectives. What does that mean to you? That, well, I guess you said since this guy's gone to college, your name and your picture is already up there, but then maybe here in the next few years, this next incoming class of high school freshmen, it's going to be Eric McCoy that they remember, they list off, you know, 8 years later.
Honestly, that'd be a great feeling, because I spent a lot. If I go back to Lufkin, I'm going to go to the high school. I always go back and talk to the coaches, and just being able to see my own name up there, I think that's a pretty special thing to have. I mean, it's an honor, really.
Mm-hmm. I know you're probably gonna give me the sidestep answer here, but Dez was 24. A lot of these projections have you at 22, 23. Would that mean a little something to you to be the highest draft pick out of Lufkin?
Yes. Well, I'm not gonna say going before him would be a big thing. If I could sneak into the first round, that'd be great. That's everyone's lifelong dream, is to be a first round pick in the NFL draft.
Sure. Sure.
So I honestly, that'd be a big deal to me.
Yeah, it would maybe make you smile a little bit bigger if you knew that you, at least for a time being, you were the highest drafted guy out of your high school.
Yeah, I could hold my head high on that one.
Okay, very cool, very cool. Do you have any kind of relationship with Dez? Have you ever met Dez?
I do not. We followed each other on Instagram the other day. That was pretty cool.
Nice.
But that's about it.
Nice. What did that hold a little special meaning to you?
Yeah. Like, he was a hometown hero growing up.
Yeah.
And he followed me on Instagram, and I followed him back, and it was just, I mean, I had been following him, but he followed me back eventually, and that put a smile on my face. I'm not going to lie.
Just what parts of being an Aggie and playing for Texas A&M has kind of put you in the position you are and brought you to where you are today?
Yeah, okay. So I would just say, first off, there's not another place in the world like A&M, with the fans, the facilities, the coaching staff. I would say Coach Turner played a big role in my – Coach Turner and Coach Grimes, who's our quality control O-line coach, they played a big role in my development just from the last year under Coach Sumlin to this first year under Coach Fisher. Just in the player that I became, I feel like I grew a lot over this season. And I would just say the tradition. There's no place with tradition like A&M. I talked to other guys from other schools, and they say that A&M is probably their favorite place to play, even though it's one of the hardest places to play. So I give a lot of credit to A&M for who I am today, the man I am, and just helping develop me into who I am.
Definitely. You mentioned Coach Quick. I know I saw that in your little bio online. Is he still the head coach over at Lufkin?
Yes, he is.
Do you happen to have his number? I'd sure like to get a hold of him and just kind of pick his brain a little bit about, you know, what it means for the town to have another guy in the NFL. Would that be something you could pass along to me?
Yeah, I can do that.
Well, that's Eric McCoy breaking down a little bit of what his draft life has been like lately, his life before the draft, his life before Texas A&M. But also, who I got a hold of is his high school football coach, Todd Quick, who broke down a little bit about what living in Lufkin's like, a little bit about what playing football in Lufkin's like, and a little bit about McCoy. Here's Coach.
I think the angle that's really fun is the Lufkin angle and how much success that y'all have had over the years, especially with guys getting the NFL and how special that is. I mean, Eric told me you've been there for a good long time. What does it mean for you to just having yet another guy who came out of there who is looking at maybe being a high draft pick and seeing kind of his childhood dreams realized?
Well, I've been here since '95. I came here when Coach Outlaw got the job here as a defensive coordinator. And then, so we've been here quite a while and seen a lot of kids. And, you know, we're just good old country kids that they play hard, they act right, and they do right in the classroom. And, you know, we coach them hard and they take hard coaching, and the parents allow them to take hard coaching. So, you know, that's part of it, is they have to trust us enough that we know that we're going to take care of the kids, but we're going to get in their butt in there, and they're going to respond the right way. And so it's just kind of the way the households are here and how they're raised, and it's just good old East Texas kids.
It sounds like with what a lot of you described, at least from what I've been able to get to know about Eric, he fits that mold, and seems like he's a pretty good kid too.
Well, he's always been very special with, even since he was real little. You know, his parents have done a wonderful job with him and his sister, and she's just like he is. So they're just good, down to earth. They know nothing's free. They know everything they get is because of hard work, and they earn the right in on the practice field, playing field, and the classroom. And he's been special since he was a young guy. And, you know, he didn't get signed until real late. It was probably April of his senior year. We felt like just he was a total package, just because of him being able to communicate. He can talk. He can talk to whoever he's talking to at whatever level he needs to. And you never had to check and see if he was doing right. He did right when nobody was looking. And he's always been that way. Now we've had a bunch of them come out here that way. They're just that type of kids.
You know what? I think from what we have seen and interacted with Eric McCoy, we can agree with most of those statements. He seems like a pretty good dude. I know Brent Zorneman, our buddy over at the Houston Chronicle, has said that this class has actually been one of the best classes to work with as far as interviews, as far as kind of getting to know these guys. And
yeah.
And Eric McCoy kind of leads the pack on that.
No, very personable. You know, that there were times where he wouldn't give you a long, lengthy answer. He would give you an honest answer. And I think a lot of times you would take that more than somebody just getting up there and kind of bloviating, so to speak, and just kind of putting a lot of honey in the words that they're saying. But yeah, he would give you great answers, and I'm inclined to agree with Brent. You know, I haven't been covering A&M as long as he has, obviously. Very few people have. But
zing.
But that being said, yeah, there's a lot of, and we're not buddy buddies with these guys. We don't spend a lot of time with them, but it seems like a lot of good dudes in this class anyways, or at least in this draft class. I know that Tyrell Dotson, a video surfaced, I think the NFL Network shared of him and a young man that he's friends with Down syndrome.
I believe we could give credit where credit's due. I think Alex Miller first wrote that story that
really?
The NFL picked
okay.
up. So,
all right.
Alex Miller should get credit for that.
Dallas
anyway.
Morning News. But yeah, there just seemed like a lot of good dudes in this class for sure.
So looking like for the mock drafts, like we mentioned before, if you want to look ahead to a little bit of draft preview,
draft talk,
I believe Eric McCoy is going to be the guy that will be the top ranked guy, be the first guy to go. It's looking like he could sneak into the first round as high as maybe 22, 23, but will probably be a late first round pick and probably be the Aggies' only first round pick.
Yeah, I can't see anybody else going first round. I think if you're looking up and down the board, Sternberger will most likely be the next guy to go. Some people are projecting him as high as second.
Yeah, and some people are projecting Travion Williams as high as second, too. He is like all over the board right now. There's some that have him way late. There's some that have him as high as second.
One thing that I really like about Travion Williams is his ability to block. I mean, he is not a big guy, but he is not afraid to block for the passer back in the backfield. So I think that's going to earn him a lot of points, a lot of brownie points with a lot of teams. You know, his size, I don't know. I mean, it's weird when you look at the NFL today. I mean, guys, yeah, are bigger and stronger, but there's still a place for smaller backs. Now, can he be a guy that touches the ball 30 times a game? I don't think so. You're not going to get a lot of those guys anyways to begin with, the bell cows, so to speak, in the NFL today. But I think he can play a big, meaningful role on a team.
He'd be a great third and long back.
Yeah.
Because he can catch the ball. He proved this year that he has real good hands and can catch the ball out in the flat and on some passing routes. And so I think that'll really help his stock in that regard. But you almost had Mel Kiper, someone talking over us there.
Oh, no, it was still on mute. Okay. At least on the, just to be sure.
What I think it's worth. So really, we're looking like McCoy, Sternberger, and Travion Williams are going to be the guys that you can try to look for the first 2 days. And then we get into some of the other guys like, interestingly enough, on one of the mock drafts I saw, one of the last rated guys was Kingsley Keke. And that kind of surprises me a little bit.
Yeah, it does me too. Just because, you know, the physicality that he has, the ability to play both outside and inside. I think he's shown that he can be a pretty versatile guy on the defensive line. But yeah, that's just interesting to see. It seems like Kiki's draft stock has kind of come down, whereas Dalen Mack's stock has gone up through everything, the Senior Bowl and everything else he's participated in this season, this offseason leading up to it. You know, and we talked about Tyrell Dotson earlier, and I'm not going to lie, I'm still kind of scratching my head as to why Tyrell Dotson went out for the draft so early, because I think from everything that I've seen, the grades that he's gotten, he's not projected to be a top five round guy. I mean, I don't know if maybe in some he might be projected to be around in there, but you know, he's not going to be any higher than the third round, I wouldn't think. And a guy that I bet a senior season could have done him good if he stays healthy. I mean, it's always a what if game, but you know, I think that it could have helped him.
I mean, I guess you go back, you can always lean back on some of the honesty that the Sternberger, that Jay Sternberger's parents told me his decision to come out. And Jay Sternberger came out of last season relatively unscathed on the injury front. And they basically said, you can't bet on having two seasons back to back where you come out as relatively unbanged and bruised as Sternberger did. So you might as well go ahead and come out and use another year to make some money, because you don't know exactly how long that career is going to last. Tyrell Dotson, as far as I can remember, was not very banged and bruised this season. He was mostly in there for most of the plays. And I think you could maybe draw the same kind of conclusion of, well, why waste another year that you can be making money? And go out and make some money.
Well, and I think that's a very good point. But again, with Sternberger, as we said, he's been projected a second or third round pick. Tyrell hasn't been that high. So you sit there and you wonder, well, if I risk it by doing another year in college, can I improve my draft stock? Can it fall much more? You know, how much more can it fall? I think is a good question too. And we're not in Tyrell's camp. I don't know exactly what's going on. He seems like a guy with his head on his shoulders, a good head on his shoulders. He knows what's going on, and he knows the best fit for him. But with the relationship that he had with Jimbo, being the leader of that defense, that was the biggest shock to me about a guy who declared this year.
Well, just to close it out, wrap it back up with McCoy, who again should be projected to be the highest drafted Aggie. He said he had 7 meetings, 2 before the A&M's Pro Day and 4 after. The meetings were the Panthers, the Rams, the Ravens, the Redskins, the Cardinals, and the Texans. He said, if I can read my handwriting.
Oh, no.
He had three where they came to College Station and worked out with him. The Jets, the Saints, and the Bucks. That's what I could. It looks like bugs to me. And then he had one more little interview with the Titans too as well.
Yeah.
So that's kind of what the perspective is from there. You can kind of, when those guys come on the board, be looking up and see if McCoy is there and if he's going to be taken by one of those guys. So all the best to those guys that we spent some good time covering.
And if McCoy somehow ends up going to the Texans, he'll be reunited with former Lufkin teammate Kiki Kuti.
Yes, he will.
Or Kuti. I've heard it pronounced many different ways.
Former Texas Tech great.
Or as Ross Rogers at Bryan High said, Kiki Kuti. That's how we pronounced it.
There you go. Well, we'll be back after a little musical break with maybe some Diamond Talk.
My Aggie Nation podcast continues to roll on. Are you trying to make that cup sing?
Yeah.
That's not even my water cup. We have a random water cup sitting here in the studio. Someone, probably some German-fested person left after they've been...
A.K.A. Taylor Travis?
Yeah, pretty much, okay. After he'd been here in the afternoon. Sometimes he leaves. One time I knocked it over with my elbow, and I was cursing Taylor early in the wee hours of the morning when I first
early
got here.
Early in the wee hours?
Early in the wee hours of the morning, I was cursing a pox upon him, and may the fleas of 1,000 camels feast upon his innards.
Maybe, speaking of that, maybe like for like 3 minutes at the end of this segment, which we are going to talk a little Diamond Talk, we might give our initial reactions to Game of Thrones. Are you caught
Ooh,
up?
Ooh, yes.
Are you caught up? Okay. Oh, yeah. I feel like that's what you, like if you're a sports person now with some kind of podcast, radio show, talk show, you have to talk Game of Thrones.
Because everybody else
right.
is.
Right. So we'll do that. But first, baseball, softball.
Mm-hmm.
Going in two very, very different directions.
Yes.
Let's start with some baseball because I'm out doing the baseball thing. You're out doing the softball thing. Baseball's hit a little bit of a lull. They were going strong. They at the plate. Before the last time we talked about them, there was a lull, and now they're coming back out of the lull.
They hit 3 home runs last night.
They've hit 7 home runs in the last 4 games. So power surge going on. Power surge from some interesting places. Zach DeLoach, who has not necessarily been one of the more consistent hitters over through the beginning of the season.
He's got some pop, though, for sure.
Sure. Ty Coleman, who has demonstrated pop for most of the season.
Yeah, freshman of the year, probably.
Watson, first baseman, on a little bit of a hit streak right now, too, since he's kind of come in the lineup. It's been an interesting... A little bit of time since Hunter Coleman went out with that arm injury that he had to get surgery on, and they've had to kind of try to fill some gaps. They with a little bit of Aaron Walters, a little bit of Watson. I just forgot his name.
Hunter Watson.
Yeah, that makes sense. He's on a little bit of a hit streak. You got Brett Brown last night making his second start of the season, getting his first career collegiate hit on a single, and a guy that Rob Childress really talked up, said he hit over 300 in the fall, but a little bit of injury bumps and bruises in January kind of set him back to where now it's the first time he's been really kind of available to go, and then they're going to look to get him some more playing time. He DH last night against UTA.
Well, if you've watched enough Aggie baseball in the past years, you know that what you see on opening day, it will look very different towards the end of the season, whether that's because of injuries or because some guys are cold. Rob Childress is not afraid to pull guys, and he's done that. He's made some moves in the lineup, and as you said, the past few games, it seems like it's really been working. I don't think no one's ever going to say that this year's team has the kind of firepower offensively that they've had in previous years, but I would argue that the pitching is probably better than it's been the past few
years. Which has exactly been the problem over the last little bit. And the lull and the downward slight roller coaster I was talking about is dropping 2 midweek games to Texas State and to Houston. in both of those instances, they didn't get a good start from their starting pitcher. The first one was Dustin Sines, who only went, I believe, 2/3 of an inning. And the next one was Chandler Joswalk, who went 2 innings but allowed, I believe, 3 runs on 4 hits. And this is a team that's proven, for the most part, that if they get behind big early, it's tough sledding for them to get back in the game. They've done it before, but it's much tougher sledding than like you said, one of the former A&M teams have passed that have had a little more pop in their bats.
Yeah, I don't think they're going to go in and outslug anyone. I don't. That's not their MO. I don't think that's ever
their
been.
Their MO.
Whatever. That's not going to be Rob Childress's MO when he finally, you know, writes one to the entire team saying, yes, we shall outslug every opponent that we face. That's never going to be their thing. But yeah, the offense does not have as much firepower as it has in the past. Now, you talk about coming from behind. Granted, they were down 1-0, but they came from behind last night and ended up getting a 10-5 victory over UTA.
Sure. I mean, 1-run, 2-run, but I believe that Texas State game, they were down 3-4 in, like, the first inning.
Yeah.
And it was hard to
Well,
come back.
If you think of how many teams are going to be firing on all cylinders when it's a non-conference opponent, it's a middle-of-the-week game, you've got a lot of guys in there for playing time, for playing experience, and you suddenly find yourself down 3-0 early on. I mean, you're not going to – and I'm not calling into question the team's fight or anything, but I think any team would have trouble coming back
from
that. Yeah,
but with some injuries and some things that have gone on, Rob Childress really hasn't had a deep batting bench to lean on to really mix stuff up. I mean – there's maybe been a player or two in the lineup that might not be in your weekend lineup or playing a different position, but for the most part, he's keeping his lineups pretty similar on the midweek games to the weekend games.
Yeah, but that's the thing is that A&M, at least in these midweeks, you know, they stopped a 2-game loss. They had dropped 2 straight in the midweek games until last night, but on the weekends, it's really when they've been making their bread and butter, and they've gone up in pretty much every single poll in the past couple of weeks after beating Auburn in a series at home and then going on the road this past weekend and defeating South Carolina, best 2 out of 3. So overall, they've been kind of a different team on the weekend, and I don't know if that's just getting ready and a little more pep in your step when you're facing a conference opponent, or it's just the pitching when you've got guys out there like John Doxakis and Asa Lacy starting for you. I'm sure there's a bunch of different reasons why, but they needed to show up in the middle of the week. It might not necessarily reflect that well in the standings, or it might not move them up or move them down depending on who they beat. But when they get to regional play, they're going to be facing teams that, you know, at least talent-wise are probably inferior, but they've still got to be able to beat those teams.
Well, and that you bring up a little bit of an interesting point with the regional. If you go to our buddies over at d1baseball.com, I believe they have A&M moved up to the number 5 position in their top 25.
I would probably have to subscribe to the guys at d1baseball.com.
No, you can. No. That's a free thing.
It's a freebie?
It's a freebie. You go to the little top 25 tab there.
Ooh, here we go. I found it.
Then you click the little link right there, and then you can see what the top 25 is. And I believe when this opens up, you'll see that A&M is number 5. No, number 7.
Number 7.
A&M's number 7 on there. They put out their second field of 64 projections, which is them trying to predict what the NCAA tournament field will be. They have A&M hosting in the College Station Regional, and they have them as the number 9 national seed. Which
this
is weird. Interesting.
This is from last week. This was before even the South Carolina series. So I don't know about that's a little different. But anyways, yeah, go ahead. You're right.
So so I think they are up to number 5 now that I tweeted this. So that being said, if you go from number 5, number 6, and then all of a sudden you're the 9 national seed while you're still hosting, that means that they project that A&M might drop a series or maybe even 2 before it's all said and done. And it is feasible because they really have a backloaded schedule. Ole Miss is a team that they play this week that has struggled as of late, but started off the season pretty strong.
They're coming off a World Series appearance.
Sure. And so that's going to be one to watch out. Then it this really is the toughest stretch of the season they have coming up, because going away to Ole Miss, while they should win the series, isn't necessarily going to be any
picnic.
You go right back into a midweek game at Sam Houston State, which is a high RPI team who's going to make the tournament field as they usually have in recent years, and then come back with probably the toughest test of the season, a home series with Mississippi State. And so I think that this has been an A&M team. You can correct me if I'm wrong, because this is the first, as the great Gary Blair says, you can correct me if I'm wrong. But this is a team that still, I don't know if we have a great grasp of their identity other than strong pitching, because they can, it can change a little bit here or there, or maybe what this team is fully capable of. And I think this next two weekends, this next week, is going to be where everything kind of sorts itself out a little bit.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, they face some really good opponents. I don't know if I'm going to completely buy in that this is the absolute. I think it's the toughest stretch. I don't know if it's, you know, going to be the toughest opponents that they face, because Vanderbilt's pretty dang good.
Vanderbilt's pitching was actually pretty terrible. They have great bats, as they always do, but usually Vanderbilt has great bats to complement really, really solid pitching.
Yeah.
And their pitching is not what it has been in years past.
Yeah, down a little
bit. I almost think that the more complete team that they face, they might not necessarily show up in the standings, but the more complete team they faced was Missouri of those two teams.
Yeah. Missouri had a really good showing. I mean, they came in here and they did a lot of damage. By the way, that's an old one too. Man, I can't find.
I'm going to find
it. I'm looking for the most updated D1 baseball top 25, because whenever I click on that, it's old. What's up with that? So anyways, we'll have to get Kendall Rogers on here. What's up with that with Kendall Rogers? That being said, yeah, we'll see how that all shakes out. Then you've got Arkansas, you mentioned. I think that's going to be the biggest one, because you're going in. That's wrapping up the regular season at home. That can give you a lot of momentum heading to the Southeastern Conference tournament. So I think that's going to be the big one. But, yeah, I mean, it all starts this weekend, going to Ole Miss. Bryce Blom is going to be going back to his old stomping grounds in Oxford. It should be an interesting homecoming of sorts for him. So we'll cover that. But and something else, too, is a little different in that they're wrapping up the year with, what, four straight weekend? Well, Bama is not going to start on a Thursday, but this weekend at Ole Miss starts on Thursday versus Mississippi State starts on a Thursday, and against Arkansas starts on a Thursday. I don't think that's going to make really that big of a difference, but it is one day less of rest that you get before you head into an SEC series.
Mm-hmm.
So we'll see how that all is going to shake out for the Aggies. But yeah, they're always going to hang their hat on pitching. I mean, Rob Childress is a pitching coach. He's the head coach, but that's where he makes his bread and butter, is working with the pitchers. And I think that's always going to be the identity of his team, is going to be the pitching staff. But some scrappy hitting, if they can get some big hits here and there, which they have quite a bit this season. But I've been pretty surprised, you know, from the beginning of the year, and both you and I don't know if I was necessarily as down on them maybe as you were early on in the year, but you know, the team's actually been pretty impressive.
Baseball team?
Yeah. Because, yeah. I mean, early on, were we not talking about them maybe missing postseason early on?
Yeah.
So
the difference between even this team and some of the ones in years past, to me, is that even the ones that were good, even the team that made it to the College World Series, if I'm not mistaken, was prone to a one or two weekend meltdown where they just got swept.
Yeah.
And this team has lost some games, but they've managed to at least collect a win, not avoid the sweep, or take two. They're losing little one game at a time here and there for the most part, other than the LSU series. And I think that their consistency is very, very high.
Yeah, I mean, in conference play, they've only lost one series.
If the Missouri is a weird one because of the tie.
Yeah,
but
so not a loss.
It's not a loss. It's a loss. Tie. D1 baseball poll this week, A&M 6.
Okay.
The Vanderbilt was 5, Georgia 4. By the way, in that last poll field of 64 projection, it would be a 8-9 national seed match, super regional matchup with Stanford.
Ooh. The Smarties.
The other interesting thing about that field is that had UTA coming to College Station, who
lost last night.
Yeah, who strong team, really strong team. Anyway, so that is a little baseball. Zach, why don't you give? I have not been able to follow softball as well. What's your what's Zach's corner with softball?
Softball has definitely had a hard road to hoe. You know, I think I saw somebody posting on social media the other day. It said, oh, a talent-rich state like Texas, why on earth is Aggie softball not ranked in here anywhere, especially being in the SEC? You've got these brand-new facilities. It is without a doubt a rebuilding year, and both you and I have talked about it extensively, the amount of players that you had graduate, the ones that you had transfer that were unexpected. It's been a rough year for the Aggies. So, you know, at this point, they're trying to keep their heads above water to just try and sniff postseason. I think the fact that they've got the SEC tournament at home is good because you'll have that home kind of home field advantage. Hopefully you can pull off a couple of big wins in that if you can. But right now, yeah, they're just trying to make themselves, at least in the conversation a little bit, and about a 500 team. But you can look up and down the roster, and you see a lot of these young players, especially the hitters, look really impressive. You know, Bailey Klingler has been one of the better hitters for the Aggies. She's a freshman, you know, and up and down, I think you've seen there's some real capability and there's some real raw talent, but they have to be able to put that together. And coming off a series sweep at Missouri, Mizzou was a team that was 500 in SEC play going into that series. So it's not as if the Tigers were the creme de la creme. You know, and before that, yeah, you suffered a sweep at the hands of Florida, but again, you say, well, it's Florida. So they've gone down here in the past couple of weeks. You know, they faced Georgia. They took one out of three, but they were really in all three ball games at one point or another, and just came out a little short, but they were hoping to take some momentum from that heading into Florida a couple of weekends ago for Parents Weekend and Maroon and White game and all that stuff. But right now, yeah, they're just trying to wrap up the season on a high note, but it doesn't get any easier. They take on Incarnate Word today if the rain stays off. And then Arkansas, they're going to be hosting the 18th-ranked Razorbacks, and then they visit number 9 Tennessee to wrap up the regular season.
The interesting thing about being in the SEC, as you look, what was it, last year or 2 years ago, where like every SEC team made the NCAA tournament? If A&M can just get to 500, their RPI is high enough that they'll make the tournament.
For their overall record or for their... Yeah, because conference ain't happening.
Right. No, overall record. They get their overall record to 500. They'll make the tournament, which is or at least have a decent shot at it.
And, yeah.
Because I mean, if their RPI is high enough.
I'm not familiar enough with all the ins and outs of the selection committee whenever it comes to softball. Yeah, they're playing some amazing talent. They're still 3-15 right now in SEC play, and like I said, we'll see how it all shakes out whenever they're hosting that SEC tournament.
If you look at, was it Missouri last year got in with a similar type of record, and they won some ball games in the NCAA tournament.
Yeah, you know, just the fact that you're in the SEC, like you said, and the name recognition, and you've got a Hall of Fame coach, I think that buys you a little bit, a leeway from the committee. So, yeah, they very well might end up, you know, getting in there if they can just stay above 500. But like you said, they've got that doubleheader against Incarnate Word today, and they really need that because hopefully they can pick up a couple of wins, and that would more or less ensure that they stay above 500.
Texas A&M RPI 49.
Okay.
So that gets you that if you look at the top 64 to get into the tournament, 49 gets you in.
Okay.
And that's low enough too at 49 that you'd have a pretty good argument just RPI alone if you got left out of the tournament. That's pretty low in RPI to get left out.
What will be really interesting is if, in fact, they are selected to go in there and they end up, they're not going to be hosting a regional, so where would they go? One of the places that's closest and a place that they played a couple of years ago was Louisiana Lafayette, where you've got former Texas A&M.
That would be fun.
Hitting coach is the head coach now at ULLA. You've got a couple of former Texas A&M players at ULLA, so that would make for an interesting...
That would be
matchup, would it not?
That would
be fun. Yeah, we'll see how that all shakes out.
Well, I do believe that's all the time. Well, real quick, because we teased it.
Oh, yeah. The got.
What's your take so far?
Woo, they're going to be a lot of people dead next weekend.
Yeah.
Let's just do that.
Who dies? Who's your death pool?
Brienne's going to die.
Yeah.
She was far too happy after getting knighted. Should we say spoiler alerts before we
Spoiler alert.
Sorry if you're listening in. We should have taken a little second. We'd be like, just FYI, we're going to have spoiler alerts. Nothing really happened this past episode anyways.
It was the nice emotional setup to
it
make
was
you
the
be
lead
really
up.
Sad for next week.
Yeah, you had the drinking gang that all sat around the fire, and I mean, who hasn't done that? Sat around the fire, enjoy some beers, and you know, one of your buddies.
Sing some songs, knight one of your buddies.
But yeah,
it's basically a ring dunk, right?
Pretty much.
Yeah.
Pretty much. Brienne's gonna die. Tormund's gonna die.
No, because if Brienne dies, that means that Jaime and Tormund have to live. That's according to the rules. Yeah, one of the three of that love triangle has to live.
Is that really a Grey Worm's
gonna die? Because you know he promised he's gonna take her and they're gonna run off forever.
What do we do afterwards?
Anytime there's promises made, they die.
You know, and everybody keeps bringing this up that apparently the folks of Winterfell didn't think it through when they said, "Hey, all the women and children in the crypt, and oh by the way, here comes a guy who can raise the dead." To do his bidding.
Oh, that's a good point. I didn't even think about that.
Yeah, no, that's apparently they don't have Twitter in Winterfell, or they would have found out about that already. But
I only know one thing. This is the only one thing I know. Samuel is going to live throughout all of it.
I think Samuel Tarly's going to be the guy on the
Iron
Throne. I
think his family might not survive, but I don't know if he's going to be on. I don't know if he's going to be on the throne, but I think he's going to be one that survives the whole thing.
I don't think Gilly and the little baby are going to make it.
I don't think so.
I don't think so.
Unless they actually do get saved by that little girl who wanted to fight.
Oh, yeah. Look, I like Game of Thrones. I was one of
our
those
new
guys,
segment. I don't know. See, look.
See, look. I was one of those guys that read the books. I got very involved in it. You know, you notice.
You read the books?
Yeah. Yeah.
You're a nerd.
Well, after the first season, I was like, man, this is kind of cool. So then I read the books all the way up until they
stopped. Did you put on your maester outfit and go to the A&M library and,
no.
and pull all of them?
I did go to whenever George R.R. Martin showed up, though. Okay. We went to that little Q&A talk.
You need a maester outfit.
No, I don't.
Yeah, you do.
No, just some chains, yeah. Some big chains to walk
some
around.
Sackcloth.
Yeah. But the great thing about the books, and I think what really got people intrigued, not only the buildup of characters, because somehow, some way, one guy was able to invent this entire new world with characters like Tolkien did. But the unpredictability of it all, and that people died that were like your favorite, and you had no idea, you were thinking, oh, well, this isn't going to play out this way, and boom, it does. It's been very predictable the past couple of years.
Since he stopped writing the books.
Right. When it comes to people dying, it's been pretty predictable, yeah. I think. I don't know if he'll die this next episode. I think Tyrion's going to die.
Yeah.
I think he's just too popular. You're going to have to kill him.
This next episode?
I don't know if it'll be this next episode.
Yeah,
I don't know how that's all going to shake. Because you've still got how many episodes after this? Four? And they're all like an hour and a half?
Yeah. Longest battle scene in
yes. Yeah.
Cinema. TV history.
I am so looking forward to this.
Yeah.
So looking forward to it. But yeah. And then I don't know if there's going to be some kind of tie-in with, like, the Night King is, like, somebody that we knew. Or I'm still convinced that there's going to be someone who comes back who's already dead. So, spoiler alert, in the book, Catelyn Stark comes back.
Yeah, but she's
raised from the dead.
Right, but she's the witch. She's like a witch.
Yeah, well, she's not a witch. She runs around with the Brothers Without Banners killing phrase because she's seeking vengeance or whatever.
Right.
So that character was completely left out of the TV show. But when you think about it, we never saw Stannis die. You know, there's that little aspect of it about Lady Stoneheart, who's Catelyn Stark.
Stoneheart, yeah.
I just think there's going to be some kind of twist that nobody really expected that's going to pop up.
I don't think they could make...
I hope it does.
I don't think they could make Lady Stoneheart actually like the Night King. That would be really
No. I'm not saying that. I'm just saying there's going to be... Like, somebody's going to come back. And you're going to be like, oh, snap!
It would be interesting if they brought Lady Stoneheart back. Because I've heard that theory a long time ago. couple seasons ago that someone was bringing that into play.
How did you know? Did you read the spoilers or something? Or because you didn't read the book?
No, but I listened. You know, like we said, if you have a sports talk show and you
people talk about
you talk about it, you have to talk about Game of Thrones, and people brought it up.
So here's a question. I guess it's early enough. Who is going to be sitting on the throne at the end?
Man, I don't know.
All predictability says it's going to be Jon Snow.
Well, no, I don't think.
I mean, he's got the best odds right now, right?
I don't think Jon. I think Jon Snow is going to survive, but I don't think he will sit on the Iron Throne. I think if for some reason Jon Snow and Daenerys survive, he will give it to Daenerys.
I don't know, man. I think she a little crazy.
Yeah.
I'm saying is she's just a little crazy. Like she's pretty good, but she's like whenever he told her who he was, and it wasn't like, oh my gosh, you're my nephew, and we've been
really,
doing it. It
I
was
could
more
really
like, oh.
See, I could really see. I know you say he's gonna die. I could really see Tyrion sitting on the throne.
See, I just think it's gonna be some obscure person that we don't even really think about that much.
I don't know
if it's in keeping with the theme of Game of Thrones.
You know who I'm rooting for now because I learned something new in the last week or so. I'm now rooting for Jaime Lannister. Because the actor who plays Jaime Lannister is a big Leeds United fan, who is my soccer team. And he went on the Jimmy Kimmel show and had everyone started chanting Leeds United things.
Oh,
and it
yeah.
made me very happy. So now I'm
He's really Dutch, I think. Side note, if you have Prime, do you have Amazon Prime? Have you ever seen Shot Caller?
No.
Go watch Shot Caller. It's got the guy, I can't remember his name, the guy who plays Jaime Lannister's in it.
Okay.
And he basically is like a white collar worker, and somehow he goes to prison for something, and he ends up becoming like a skinhead leader type guy.
Wow.
It's pretty good actually. But I don't know. I like how Jaime Lannister started out as this awful person, and now he's somehow earned his way into our hearts.
Yeah. Well, I think it's all the time that I have. So maybe we can talk more about this next week.
Yeah, yeah, because we'll know more.
We'll
know more about the draft. We'll know more about Game of Thrones.
So your highest probability to die is Brienne.
Yeah. She's winning that. Her and Jorah Mormont.
Yeah. Mine is too easy, but I'm going to go Grey Worm.
Okay.
We'll see who wins. All right. Well, that's the My Aggie Nation podcast for this week. Thanks so much for joining. Again, be sure to subscribe on and give us, if you want to give us some 5-star reviews. That would be nice.
Yeah.
Some 5-star reviews on Apple Podcasts and on Spotify.
Ten.
Yeah, do it twice. That would make us very happy. So otherwise, be listening. Be there on MyAggieNation.com. So for Zach Taylor and Travis Brown, this is the My Aggie Nation podcast. We'll see you next week.
It seems like every day, everything just has a way to must have it seems. But if we don't watch what we're doing, our hearts will get ruined by silly things. Good love ain't needs a girl, we know that's true. But if we wanna keep it, we gotta watch everything that we do. Make sure you're sticking with me.